built by the people and dedicated to the advancement of learning. So reads an inscription on the Boston Public Library facade that summarizes the aspirations of the American Public Library. Welcome to Copyright Clearing Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The 19th century BPL overlooking Copley Square is as nearly a palatial edifice as any in Boston. Yet above the central entrance, three words remind all comers that the treasures lying within are free to all. This week, the library of the 21st century finds technology may render those ambitions obsolete. To learn more, we turn to Publishers Weekly senior writer Andrew Albanese, who joins us every Friday. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, so, you know, before we get into all the various stories about libraries this week, we should remind people that it's that time of year and it's award season. In the last few days, we've seen a flurry of award announcements and not without a few surprises.
Yeah, absolutely. Some pretty big surprises in the awards spectrum this week. We learned that Australian writer Richard Flanagan has taken home the 2014 Man Booker Prize for his novel, The Narrow Road to the Deep North. That makes him just the third Australian to win the prestigious award for fiction. The last Aussie winner, I think, was your distant cousin, Thomas Keneally, who won for his book Schindler's Ark in 1982. In another surprise, French author Patrick Modiano won the 2014 Nobel Prize in Literature. And, you know, this happened while we were away in Frankfurt. And so an international author winning in an international place, and I asked a few people about it, and the response I heard most, even in the international halls, was, who is Patrick Modiano? Well, the 69-year-old Modiano was heralded by the Nobel Academy for the art of memory with which he evoked the most ungraspable human destinies and uncovered the life world of the occupation. I love that word, life world. I'm going to have to steal that at some point. Modiano's major works have been translated to English, and I think there's three books that are from David Godine Publishers. That's Missing Person, Honeymoon, and Catherine Certitude. And another book of his is out from the University of Nebraska Press, and I think that's Out of the Dark. A collection of three Modiano novellas, Suspended Sentences, was set to be published by the Yale University Press in February of next year, but understandably, they've moved that release up to this November. And finally, this week, we also got the finalists, for the National Book Foundation's National Book Awards. We got the lists for fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and young people's literature. And I'm not going to name them all here. I'm just going to suggest that you go to the Publishers Weekly website, where you can find the entire list there, along with reviews of all the works that are nominated. And as usual, it is a pretty eclectic and interesting list. And also, let's not forget author and activist Naomi Klein, who this week took home Canada's richest literary prize, the Hilary Weston Writers Trust Prize for nonfiction. And this is for her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. So congratulations to all of the winners and the finalists there.
Well, indeed. And, you know, on that list of National Book Award nominees is Roz Chast. So we get an interesting, not quite a graphic novel, but a novel, or I should say a memoir with graphics. And that'll be in the running for Best Nonfiction Award. We wish them all, of course, good luck. And there may be some questions about how all of these works, or any works for that matter, are accessed in the 21st century world of ebook editions, accessed, I should say, from libraries. And that's key to the discussion for the rest of this particular program. So tell us what's happening there.
Yes, indeed. Now, once again, this is a story that emerged while we were just heading off to Frankfurt last week. But listeners may be aware that Adobe has been under heavy criticism after a report from Nate Hoffelder at the Digital Reader revealed that the latest version of Adobe Digital Editions is collecting and transmitting unencrypted user data back to Adobe. And this week, after hearing concerns from librarians, Adobe said that it was going to release a new update as possibly as early as next week. But it remains to be seen if this is going to quiet concerns about our privacy when it comes to ebooks and libraries. So what's exactly the problem here? Well, as Hoffelder uncovered, the latest version of Adobe Digital Editions apparently sends a host of user information in the clear, that is, without encryption, back to Adobe, including reader account information, device IDs, pages read, and not only for books in the Adobe Digital Editions library, but possibly for other books on the user's device. Now, it's not at all clear why Adobe would collect this data. And it's certainly not clear what's happening to this data once they've collected it. Possibly nothing. But regardless, as PW contributing editor Peter Brantley told me in an interview this week, that, you know, that collection and that transmission of this unencrypted data abrogates assumptions of reader privacy, and it does create a hackable data set out there. In a statement, ALA officials said they were concerned not only about the transmission of this unencrypted data, but they were also questioning why Adobe would need to send all this beta back to the Adobe mothership. You know, Adobe says they use this data to make sure that usage is in compliance with license terms. As we've spoken about many times on this show, there's different models for accessing ebooks from all the major publishers. But notably, this data transfer did not occur with previous versions of the Adobe Digital Editions app. And, you know, this is the same models that the publishers have been using, just a different app with more data collection. And as we, you know, maybe some of our readers know or our listeners know, Adobe Digital Editions is widely used to access ebooks and libraries. So this is a story worth watching. Now, there may also be a silver lining to all this. In a blog post, the Electronic Frontier Foundation also jumped onto criticism of Adobe. And, you know, it noted that this might soon be the scandal that finally turns publishers off using ebook DRM, I should say, at all. They recalled the music industry's rootkit scandal. And I don't know if you remember, but back in 2005, one of the major labels was outed for using basically a system that was developed for spyware and malware. So maybe the EFF notes, if people begin to take note of what's happening with ebooks, it could be the end of DRM for books, much like that rootkit scandal was the end of DRM in music, or marked the beginning of the DRM in music. And most importantly, I think this issue has really finally just kicked up interest in privacy issues. You know, thus far, getting access to ebooks for libraries, the main concern for ALA has been about just getting them, allowing, you know, publishers actually selling these books to libraries. But I think now that all the publishers are doing that, we're finally going to be focusing more on how we're getting those books, and digital privacy is a big part of that. So you can follow the story in the PW website. We certainly expect to have an update next week.
Well, you know, DRM is one of those technologies that a lot of people love to hate, and you've got a major piece in PW this week from commentator Michael Kelly, who raises another issue where DRM may have an impact, and that's on preservation. And tell us what's happening there.
Yeah, this is another story that really hit a nerve while we were in Frankfurt, and yet we didn't really talk about it much there. You know, We have a lot of conversations about ebooks these days, but I think we're just starting to scratch the surface of what our ebook future would look like. And as you mentioned, preservation is a big part of that. So you can read Michael Kelly's report on the PW site. It's up now. And we do expect to have an update on that coming in the coming days. But I think Columbia University's Robert Wolven hit the nail on the head with a quote in that story. He called digital preservation the global warming issue for libraries, because we know that we need to do something about it now, or we're going to pay a big price later. Specifically, the piece notes how the ebook market, which operates on a licensed access model rather than an ownership model, as in you buy a book in print and you own it, and you know what you can do with it. Well, it's licensed access for ebooks. You know, you're basically just getting access to the words. And that has us tumbling towards what Michael Kelly called a digital memory hole, in which large portions of our literary heritage could be lost altogether one day, because libraries simply can't maintain their ebook collections like they do their physical collections. You know, this presents a real challenge. Not only are we talking about keeping digital content safe, we're talking about keeping it usable with constant software upgrades, keeping it authentic and accessible and also discoverable. And, you know, and it's hard to do this for libraries, all because of this matrix of legal questions, format issues, DRM, and of course, this fractured business ecosystem that's driven by proprietary platforms like the Kindle and iBooks and, of course, Adobe Digital Editions. So the good news there is that it's still early and publishers and libraries still have time to come up with a plan. But actually, is really needed sooner rather than later, Kelly notes, because, you know, as ebooks become the norm, ebook-only works are becoming more common, and there's, of course, self-publishing. you know, if libraries are going to continue to be the guarantors of our literary past, that guarantee is on thin ice right now, and a plan really is needed. So, you know, we saw a lot of things in Frankfurt that suggested that digital clearly is the future for publishing. In fact, it's the present for publishing, I'd even go so far as to say. But the Adobe issue and the preservation issue here are two vital conversations that we haven't seen much of yet. So let's hope that changes sooner rather than later.
Well, you know, one way to get some action in this country is to get out and vote. And Election Day for 2014 is less than 3 weeks away. So where you are seeing things, it's going to be a big day, not only for all the candidates, but for libraries, too. And you have something on that in Monday's issue.
Absolutely. In Monday's issue, we have a great piece on an organization called Every Library, which is a political action committee that helps library districts win elections nationwide. So basically what they do is they provide funds, they go in and lobby communities to actually pass issues that might be on their local ballots to fund their libraries. So in Monday's issue, we have a story on the organization, and Director John Kraska told PW that there are eight ballot initiatives coming up on Tuesday, November 4th, and they represent about $5 to $6 million in funding for libraries. So you can check out Monday's issue to find out where those are and what's at stake and what the organization is doing to help those libraries succeed. And, you know, there's one other thing too that I wanted to mention here, that Every Library is obviously an important organization, but they really haven't seen much support from the major publishers just yet. And I find that puzzling, because if nothing else, you know, libraries deliver a lot of money to the bottom lines of these publishers. You know, and in one sense, libraries are like a great big government funding program for books. So I would hope that in the future, the major trade publishers will see it in their interest to support Every Library and some of these local ballot initiatives, because that's money that's going right into their pockets and into authors' pockets and helping us all read.
Well, indeed. And, you know, I said at the top there that the motto of the BPL, the Boston Public Library, was that it was free to all. And we certainly hope that in the future it will remain that way. And so we want to draw people's attention to the importance of libraries. And if there is a vote on your ballot where you are, get out and vote for your library, too. Andrew Albanese from PW Publishers Weekly, thanks so much for joining us on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow us on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.